It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading in Chicago. First, Kirk Donsbach with StoneX.
Definitely more cow-calf, a few yearling operations, some grain, but highly, largely cow-calf and wheat, Kansas City wheat.
That's back home in Montana. How did he become a broker?
Well, I actually started traveling way back on the road for a company. I was, 21 years old, making more money than a ranch kid ever thought was possible, which isn't a lot, but it was more than a ranch kid thought was possible. And I started playing in the commodity markets. And then my dad got in some health issues, and I had to come home. So I thought, I'm going to apply what I learned to try to manage my risk. I did that for a while. And then I was like, I want to be able to help people. And then as everything in our industry, it's highly regulated. And I discovered that you just can't help people. You got to have all the licenses and yada, yada. And long story short, I ended up being a broker for StoneX.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Joined today by Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. I have contact information for Bob coming up in just a moment. But Bob, as we begin our conversation today, we've been watching some interesting things. One, a sell-off on the equity side, kind of a sideways trade, if you will, talking outside markets now, on the crude side, and we're seeing some strength in the cattle. And I don't know if they all work together. We'll swing back around and hit grains and oil seeds here in just a minute. But do we need to be watching outside markets when we start talking about our commodities, our livestock and grains?
Yeah, for sure we do. And there's a lot of correlation in these markets. It really comes down to, I guess, the economics of it, but a lot of it also comes down to the psychology. So one of the hardest things to learn when you're in this business is that psychology is a big driver in a lot of decision making, at all peril, potentially, meaning that you should be looking at the facts, you should be looking at the fundamentals, you should be looking at potentially some of the technicals to kind of give you a key areas that you might find some support or resistance in particular markets, to either make just speculative trading decisions, and this is all in my opinion, or your hedging decisions, right? You got to take the emotions out. And it just seems to me that not just now, but over the last couple of years, and it's really been amped up, that it just seems to me that there's a lot of psychology in these markets, a lot of fear that comes through. Then you get the ones who want to kind of counter that fear and will try to fade moves. And, you know, that might be able to propel a market a certain way for a short period of time. And then we get those cycles. So that's a kind of a long answer to a short question there, but I see a lot of that. And I think that's what's happening in these markets. So, for example, one of the things we talk about these markets is the impact of the U.S. dollar on our commodities. You know, and then we talk about the interest rates, and what's happening with the Fed, or at least what we believe is going to happen with the Fed, and how that's going to impact potentially the power of the U.S. dollar relative to foreign currencies, because that'll be a driver as to potentially foreign demand. But at the end of the day, that's an important thing, and we're going to watch it and see if the trend continues, for example, in a stronger dollar, or when the dollar starts to break, you know, as it has given up a little bit of its steam lately. But how do you take that one little snippet of information and make a valid trading decision solely on that? And you can't. And I don't think you can. And I think that's the part where it's really hard to take some of those external markets and really use it as a powerful tool. I think it should be in your arsenal, but as a powerful tool in the decision-making process. Not just the dollar, not just interest rates, but also to your point about bringing up the equity markets, that seems to be a barometer of wealth and how well you feel. Most people, I think, have some money in some retirement accounts, depending on what age they are and where they're at in life. And, you know, it's not pleasant to get that quarterly statement, or when you sit down with your financial advisor and have that quarterly chit chat at the coffee shop or whatever, and the market's going down. I mean, granted, it is what it is, and things do ebb and flow in the marketplace, and you can't always go straight up. But nonetheless, you get that psychological impact of, oh no, you know, we need to tighten our belts, and, you know, how's that going to impact us when it comes to our grocery shopping? And are we going to buy the high-end cut of steak? Are we going to go for the, you know, the 70-30, you know, ground beef? What are we going to do? You know, and is ham less expensive than beef at the moment? So you make those decisions based on that type of external input too. So absolutely, these are all important. And the thing that kind of is interesting to me, just to go on a little bit more about this, is some of the outside markets that usually have, I guess, traditional negative correlation to the way the equity markets, or negative correlation to where the dollar is moving, or negative correlation to, or some kind of correlation, be it positive or negative, to what interest rates are doing and inflation, are just not acting like they normally had. And I guess I'm referring to the precious metals. You see gold down about $30 today. It used to be a time when, back when I started trading, I hate to say it, in the early 90s, seems like an eternity ago, but in the early 90s, it seemed like, you know, gold was this flight to quality, a safe haven, you know, if you will. And granted, it could be impacted by the strength of the dollars, no doubt about that, but nonetheless, it was a safe haven, a solid store of value. And when you saw big moves to the downside in the equities, usually that would be buoyant for gold and buoyant for silver. And we're just seeing, I think, a little bit less of that inverse correlation and more of a, hey, what the equity markets are doing, it's kind of drowning down most of the commodities. And that includes some of these that used to actually move in the opposite direction. So kind of give you a long answer, but yeah, I think that those external markets are important. There's no doubt about it. I think the trend of the outside markets is more important than like the day to day. But that's my take on how those things can influence, you know, some of the commodity markets that we talk about.
You know, I've kind of threw a mix of stuff in there, but kind of important to also remember we've got a report coming out from USDA this week, really focused on the grain side, right?
It is. So we're getting more data from the USDA about the grains. I think what's happened here in the U.S. in terms of production is pretty well known. We'll see if there's any tweaking in terms of what their anticipation is in terms of what's happening elsewhere in the world. And I think that's really where traders these days are really focused on. So they're looking at what's happening down in South America, in particular with Argentina. They're looking at what's happening in Europe, in particular with Ukraine and Russia and that situation and how that's evolving. And then we're also looking pretty tight at the weather. So to break it down in terms of wheat, we look at what's happening in Canada. So right now we've got a context of a little bit of an export market that seems to be a little sloppy for us at the moment. Out of Russia right now, they're looking at possibly a record crop there. Stats at Canada came out and suggested that they're looking at wheat production of about 33.8 million metric tons, which is down from their September estimate, but still up 52% from last year. So in terms of just looking at wheat, things look bearish from those two aspects, but then you also have to never forget what's happening in Russia and Ukraine. And as long as things continue to move out of there, that's a good thing. That at least provides the world with some supply. And then also, you look at the Argentine situation where the wheat exports could reach one of their lowest levels in, I think, almost 10 years, about 8 or 10 years, at just about 6.5 million metric tons. And that's obviously due to the fact that they're dealing with that prolonged drought. So a little push-pull there, but net-net, at the end of the day, the market is, I think, has the ultimate say in terms of price direction and the opinion. And, you know, the wheat futures have had a pretty good slide to the downside. If we look at the hard red winter wheat, the Kansas City variety made new swing lows today, and they'll be threatening those mid-August lows of about 8.11 or 8.12. I think it got down to there, and today's low is sitting there somewhere towards about 8.40. So there could be another 30 cents worth of work to the downside right there. But new swing lows, so the market is telling us that it looks like there's going to be ample wheat out there, not enough demand at the moment. And then in terms of the Minneapolis wheat, again, new swing lows, but not new new lows. I'm just talking like recent lows of the last couple few months. And then if you look at the soft red winter wheat in Chicago, again, same story, new swing lows. But it actually did take out those mid-August lows. So on a relative week scale, the Chicago variety is definitely looking the weakest, in my opinion, compared to the Kansas City or the Minneapolis. And it's probably because the hard red winter wheat crop condition readings are pretty darn low. So I would imagine that on a relative basis, you know, it's going to be a wait and see in terms of that particular crop and how it evolves. So that is what's happening with the wheat. If you want general feeling for this month in December, I ran some data and basically asked my software, you know, if you got long today and you exited at the end of this month, what would you typically expect? A bullish move or a bearish move in corn, hard red winter wheat, soybeans, cattle, feeder cattle, and cotton? And for corn, it was biased to the long side, barely. So about 60% out of the last 15 years. It's been an up move from today until the end of the month. Now there's swings in between. Okay. So it's not just one way, but relative strength. Kansas City wheat and soybeans were about a 50-50, so flip a coin. Cattle and feeder cattle both lean pretty strongly to the bullish side, 80% out of the last 15 years. It ended up higher in price for feeder cattle, Jan feeders, than where we started today. And then for the fat cattle, 14 out of the last 15 years. So heavy long bias in December for the Feb cattle contract. And just to throw in cotton, that one is a 73%. Long bias over the last 15 years for that March cotton. So just to give you context on some of those things that might also play into the market, besides the psychology we talked about, besides the external markets and some of the day-to-day fundamentals.
Okay. If we want to talk one-on-one, whether it's grains and oil seeds, or we want to talk cotton or the softs or livestock or even anything else, we can do that one-on-one, can't we?
Absolutely. You can pick up the phone, give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053. You can also reach out by email at bmaurer, that's B-M-A-U-R-E-R, at manducatrading.com, or come visit us at two sites, www.manducatrading.com or www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
Bob Maurer's with Manduca Trading Chicago on today's Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Quality hay starts here. The Heston 2200 Series Large Square Balers by Massey Ferguson deliver more capacity, more consistent bales, and better density than ever. Every aspect of the 2200 Baler Series was designed to make or save you money. No matter the baler or the bale size, it's capacity and productivity that gets the job done. With minimal servicing and easy maintenance, spend more time in the field. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turn roads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
There's a tradition down here in the South. A tradition of hard work. A tradition of straight talk. For more than 100 years, Delta Pine Cotton has been a proud part of that tradition. With proven yield potential and genetics you won't find anywhere else, Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with Strong Cotton from Delta Pine Brand. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Keep up with Bob Maurer online, myfuturesadvisor.com.
At Ag Texas Farm Credit, your success is our only purpose. We understand your financing needs and will be here to support you through it all. We specialize in traditional farming and ranching operations, recreational property, equipment and livestock, agribusiness, and country home loans, plus insurance and leasing. At Ag Texas, we're dedicated to the prosperity of agriculture and rural America. Ag Texas Farm Credit, your success, our purpose.
Did you know that the world-famous Café Du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like at Café Du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. It's the Agribusiness Report. Cindy Hyde-Smith is a senator from Mississippi, member of the Senate Ag Committee.
We talk about commodities, we talk about cattle and all of those things, but in the rural development, which is included in the Farm Bill, we have so many hospitals, rural hospitals, that they're just on the brink of closing. And, you know, there's a lot of things in there that USDA can provide, access to financing. It's very important right now because of what we are facing in many of our rural hospitals in Mississippi. You know, you think about rural areas and, you know, you have all these great producers out there that are growing crops, but you live in a community that has to be enhanced that you can continue to stay there and be a producer. And the rural hospitals are actually, that's one of them when you're raising your family out there on the farm. But it is some serious issues going on right now that have me greatly concerned.